Penguin Random House Audio presents Deep End by Allie Hazelwood. Read for you by Therese Plummer and Ben Holtzmuller. This one has to be for the Amsterdams. Dear listener, once again, thank you so much for choosing one of my books. This one might be my favorite I've ever written, and I'm so happy it's out in the world. Before you dive in, I want you to know that this work contains consensual and negotiated explorations of kink, in particular of power exchange. If you choose to listen to it, I hope you enjoy the experience. Love, Allie. Prologue. It all starts when Penelope Ross leans in over the restaurant's solid wooden table, lifts her index finger, and declares, 10th circle of hell. You find the love of your life, but the sex is intensely meh. In front of the entirety of Stanford's diving roster, at 11:15 in the morning, during my 21st birthday brunch. 4 seconds ago, we were oversharing about our digestive issues, and the whiplash is disorienting. I've been taking advantage of my newly acquired legal rights, but no amount of alcohol can prevent me from blurting out, what? Not my most tactful moment. Thankfully, my incredulity is drowned out by the reactions of the rest of the team. Bree's spit take, Bella's scandalized gasp, and Victoria's skeptical, isn't Bloomkvist the love of your life? He sure is, Penn nods. I fill my mouth with mimosa. The taste is far worse than plain orange juice, but the buzz is very welcome. Penn, honey, Bree wipes espresso martini off her glasses using the shirt hem of her sister Bella, who allows it. Twin stuff, I guess. How many drinks have you had? Like half of that pitcher. Ah, maybe we should, but in mimosa veritas. Penn leans forward even more. Her voice drops as she makes a sweeping gesture. I am confiding in you guys. Being vulnerable. We're having a moment. Victoria sighs. Penn, I love you, ride or die. Would follow you into the very fires of Mordor and all that shit, but we're not having a moment. Why? Because you're making shit up. Why? Because Bloomkvist fucks. I sit back in a semi-zonked state and force myself to think about Lucas Bloomkvist. A rare occurrence for me. People assume that I'm fascinated with everything that goes on in a pool, but nope. The only sports I find remotely interesting are diving and land diving. Or, as the normies call it, gymnastics. The rest is out of my purview. There's just too much stuff going on in aquatics. I can't keep track of Stanford's water polo teams, let alone the swimmers. And yet, Bloomkvist is hard to ignore. Because of the truckload of medals, maybe. The world records. Plus, if the captain of my team is part of an athletics power couple, it behooves me to be aware of its other half. And Penn and Bloomkvist have been dating since forever. For all I know, they were betrothed at birth to cement U.S.-Sweden diplomatic relations. I close my eyes to resurface my spotty memories of him. Black Speedos, tattoos, short, choppy brown hair, above-average wingspan. The majestic and yet improbable build of every other D1 swimmer who ever lived. Victoria is right. We can safely hazard that, yes, Bloomkvist does fuck. I didn't say he doesn't. He's great. Just not. Penn winces, and it's such an odd break from her sparkling self-assurance, it slices right through my mimosa haze. The thing about Penn, she's kind of great. Aspirational. The type of person who instinctively knows how to make someone feel at ease. She'll remind you to drink water. Offer the ponytail holder on her wrist when your hair sticks to your lips. Remember your half birthday. I could take personal development workshops till I turned 50 and let a team of data analysts reprogram me, but I still wouldn't have a third of her charm because charisma like hers sprouts from base pairs nestled in chromosomes. And now she's biting into cuticles like she just discovered social anxiety? I don't love it. Just not what I want. And honestly, vice versa. She adds in a low mumble. Which would be, bless Victoria for asking what I don't have the courage to. The extroverted, filterless member every team needs. Oh my God, I just want to, you know. Sometimes Pen groans. I stiffen, suddenly alarmed. Is Bloomfist forcing you to, no. God, no, she shakes her head. But I must look unconvinced because she continues. No, he would never. Everyone else has dropped off the conversation. The twins bickering over whose drink is whose. Victoria gesturing toward the server. Luke's not like that. Just, how do you tell a guy that you need something different? Why is she asking me? Have the lines on my forehead arranged to form the words, previously ask someone to spank her? Honestly, it would check out. Aren't Scandinavians very open-minded? Maybe? He's definitely open-minded when it comes to... But she breaks off because a small posse of out-of-tune waiters interrupt us with a string of happy birthday to yous, and many things happen at once. I blow on the single candle haphazardly plonked on top of a lava cake. A team present of new stretch cords is produced. I am briefly verklempt that someone as chronically introverted as me found people who are, God, so nice. Victoria needs to use the restroom. Pen gets a call from her aunt. Bree wants to know which classes I'll be taking in the fall. It's too much, in too little time. We never end up returning to the topic of Penelope Ross and Lucas Bloomfist's mysteriously imperfect sex life, which is for the best. Whatever issue they're dealing with is probably trivial anyway. She doesn't like the brand of condoms he uses. He falls asleep without cuddling her. They're tired after practice and squabble over who should be on top. Not my circus and or monkeys, so I let the matter slip out of my mind, smooth as a long thin eel. Until a few weeks later, when everything changes. Chapter 1. The thing I dread the most about junior year begins on a Wednesday morning, a couple of weeks before the start of the autumn quarter. It's penciled into my Google Calendar for the 10 to 11 slot, a single word that weighs more than the sum of its letters. Therapy. This is somewhat unconventional, Sam tells me on our first meeting. No judgment or curiosity in her tone. She appears to have mastered neutrality in all facets of life. Her beige pantsuit, the medium grip of a handshake, an ageless, graceful look that could be anywhere between 40 and 70. Is it too early in our acquaintance for me to want to be her? I was under the impression that Stanford Athletics had its own team of licensed sports psychologists. They do, I say, letting my eyes skim over the walls of her office. Diplomas outnumber personal photos, 4-0. Sam and I may already be the same person. They're great. I did work with them for the past few months, but I shrug, hoping to broadcast that it's on me if it didn't work out. I had some issues a few years ago, unrelated to diving. At the time, cognitive behavioral therapy worked well for me. My coach and I talked it over, and since it's your specialty, I decided to try counseling services. I smile like I have full trust in this plan. If only. I see. And in the past, when you did cognitive behavioral therapy, what issues did you... Nothing sports related. It was family stuff. My relationship with my dad. But that's all solved now. I realize that I spoke a whit too quickly. And expect Sam to challenge what's obviously a half-baked, still-frozen-in-the-middle truth. But she just stares, assessing and hawkish. Lots of attention, all on me, all at once. I squirm in the chair, feeling the ache that always clings to my muscles. Her presence is not particularly calming, but I'm here to be fixed, not soothed. I see, she says eventually. Bless CBT and its lack of bullshit. There is this thing you do that's bad for you. I'll teach you to not do it. Your insurance will give me money and we'll each go our merry way. BYO trauma. Tissues are on me. And just to be clear, Scarlett, you want to be here? I nod emphatically. I may not look forward to the agony that comes with exposing the squishy bits of my soul, but I'm not some cliche detective refusing to see a shrink in an 80s crime show. Therapy is a privilege. I'm lucky to have it. Above all, I need it. I must admit I don't know much about diving. It seems like a very complex discipline. It is. Lots of competitive sports require a delicate balance of physical and psychological strength. But diving? Diving has trained long and hard to become the mind-fuckiest of them all. Would you be willing to explain? Of course. I clear my throat, glancing down at my joggers and compression shirt. Black and cardinal red. Stanford swimming and diving. Fear the tree. Whoever designs our gear clearly wants for our identity to be reduced to our athletic performance. Never forget, you are what you score. We jump off things, plunge into pools, do some acrobatics in between. I mean to make her laugh, but Sam's not prone to amusement. I'm assuming there's more? Lots of regulations. But I don't want to bore her or be a difficult client. I'm an NCAA Division I athlete. I compete in two events. One is from the springboard, that bouncy fiberglass board that I mimic its up and down motion with the flat of my hand. That's 3 meters high, about 10 feet. As tall as an ostrich, the voice of my first coach reminds me. What's the other event? The platform. That's 10 meters high. 33 feet. 2 giraffes. No bounce? Static. She hums. Does the scoring work like gymnastics? Pretty much. A panel of judges looks for mistakes and subtracts points accordingly. And how many dives do you perform per competition? That depends. And it's not really about how many. I bite the inside of my cheek. She lets me take my time, but stays engaged. It's the group.
The group?
The type of dive, if you will.
And how many groups are there?
6 in total. I fidget with the tip of my ponytail. Forward, backward, reverse, twist, arm stand.
I see.
And in your email, you mentioned that you've been recovering from an injury. Therapy is a privilege. I don't like it, though. Correct. When was that? About 15 months ago, at the end of freshman year. I clench my fists under my thighs, wait for her to demand the gory details, ready to recite my list. Sam, though, spares me.
Did you say that there are 6 groups of dives?
Yes. I'm surprised at the topic shift and let my guard down. It's a misstep of catastrophic proportions. And this injury of yours, Scarlett, does it have anything to do with the fact that you only listed 5? Chapter 2.
You fucked up,
Mariam says during the first week of classes, and all I can think past the despair droning in my ears is that I deserve better from my roommate. I've helped her clean bloodstains off countless wrestling singlets. Am I really not to be afforded compassion? Or at least disapproval of the more tacit variety? I am 1/4 German. I counter. My mom was born there. I should be good at this.
Your mother died when you were 2, Vandy. Your stepmommy, who raised you, is from bumfuck Mississippi.
Harsh, but fair. My genetic makeup is irrelevant and does not predispose you to a passing grade in German. She says with the contempt of someone who grew up bilingual. I can't presently recall what part of the brain controls the ability to learn languages, but hers spins beautifully and turbine-like.
an excellent source of renewable energy ready to power a small European country. Meanwhile, I'm not good at this stuff, I whine. Why should I be, though? It's ridiculous that med schools have foreign language requirements. It's not. What if you decide to do Doctors Without Borders and your ability to save a life depends on knowing whether the scalpel is male or female? I scratch my neck. De-scalpelin? Bam, patient's dead. Mariam shakes her head. You fucked up, my dude. With a little help from my academic advisor. Take the pre-med courses first, he said. You'll need the knowledge to pass the medical college admission test, he added. It's the right move, he concluded. And I listened, because all I ever wanted was to be on top of shit. Because I'm a student athlete, and my schedule is a crossover between a Jenga tower and a Shibari tutorial. Spontaneity? Only if prearranged. I made a 15-year plan the day I graduated from high school and always intended to stick to it. Upwards of one NCAA title, med school, orthopedics, engagement and marriage, compulsory happiness. Of course, I screwed up that plan by stuffing chem and bio sequences into my freshman and sophomore years, without considering that science classes were never my weakness. Enter junior year and my GPA quakes in its boots. Psychology is distressingly vague. The German dative haunts my goriest nightmares. English composition wants me to construct cogent arguments on elusive slippery topics. Poetry, the ethics of pest control, maximum mandates for government officials. Do people exist when we cannot see them? It's easier for me when balls fall neatly into their intended buckets. Black and white, right and wrong, carbon-based and inorganic. This year is shades of grays and marbles scattered all over the floor. A German language one oil puddle spilled underneath. I used to be a straight-A student athlete. Used to be in control. Used to live in pursuit of excellence. At this point, I'm just trying to avoid explosive failures. Wouldn't it be lovely if I could manage not to constantly let down the people around me? Switch to another language, Mariam suggests. Like I haven't already explored every escape route. Can't. It's like shingled roofing. They all overlap with something. Such as morning drills, afternoon practice, any of the other million activities for which Stanford recruited me. And this is supposed to be the year I fulfill my athletic potential. If I still have it anyway. If it was ever there. It sure felt like it back at bumfuck high school. Missouri. But I've given up on correcting Mariam. Half a dozen D1 coaches aggressively elbowed each other to lure me to their schools because I was a former junior Olympian, national team member, junior world medalist, top recruit. Every club coach I'd had since age 6 had blown smoke up my butt. You're excellent at this, Vandy. You'll do great things, Vandy. Promising young diver, Vandy. I frolicked in that smoke like a blissed-out prairie vole. Until college, when I finally stood corrected. In fact, I barely even stood. My brain must have decided to do me a solid because I have no memories of the 30 seconds that changed my life. Lucky me, the whole thing is on tape for anyone to watch, because it happened at the NCAA diving finals. It even comes pre-commentated. And that was Scarlett Vandermeer of Stanford University, junior Olympic bronze. Definitely the big breakout of the season and on the verge of a new platform record. Before this dive, that is. Yeah, she was attempting an inward dive with 2.5 somersaults in pike position that she managed flawlessly this morning at the prelims. In fact, it got her 8s and 9s. But this time something went poorly from takeoff. It's always those you trust the most. Yeah, that was definitely a failed dive. That's going to be a 0 from the judges in terms of scoring. But she also entered the water at the wrong angle, so here's hoping that she isn't hurt. To which my body said, fuck hoping. It's funny, in a remarkably unfunny way. I clearly remember the anger. at the water, at myself, at my own body, but I have no recollection of the pain. In the video, the girl limping out of the pool is a doppelganger who stole my body. The long braid roping down her red swimsuit belongs to an imposter. The dimples, as she strains her lips into a smile? Uncanny. And why does the little gap between her front teeth look exactly like mine? The camera follows her woozy gait mercilessly, gawking even as Coach Seema and his assistants run to help. Vandy, are you okay? The answer is unintelligible, but Coach loves to recount the story of how the girl said, "Yeah, but I'm going to need an Advil before my next dive." Turns out, she was right. She would need an Advil before her next dive. And surgeries. And rehab. Her final tally? Concussion, ruptured eardrum, twisted neck, labral tear of the left shoulder, pulmonary contusion, sprained wrist, sprained ankle. A heavy, viscous weight lodges in my chest cavity whenever I watch the video and imagine what she must have gone through. Till I remember that the girl is me. There isn't a single guy I've matched with on dating apps who hasn't asked me, "Diving is pretty much the same thing as swimming, right?" But much like boxing, ice hockey, and lacrosse, diving is a contact sport. Every time we enter the water, the impact beats through our skeletons, muscles, internal organs. Eat your heart out, NFL. You need to prepare for the very real possibility that you won't be able to dive again, Barb told me before my surgery. So difficult to dismiss what your stepmom says as pessimistic drivel when said stepmom is a brilliant orthopedic surgeon. We just want your shoulder to regain full mobility. I know, I said, and cried like a baby, first in her arms, then alone in my bed. But Barb was overcautious, and I was lucky. Recovery turned out to be within the realm of possibility. I redshirted during my sophomore year, rested, took the meds, stuck to the anti-inflammatory diet, focused on the PT and the stretches and the rehab as zealously as a nun saying her nighttime prayers. I visualized my dives, cradled my aches, showed up for practice anyway, watching the rest of the team train. The smell of the chlorine clinging to my nose, the shimmery blue of the pool just feet away, yet impossibly far. Then, 2 months ago, I was cleared for training. And it has been, well, there's a reason I'm seeing a therapist. I think I have an idea to fix your foreign language problem. I glance suspiciously at Mariam, and yet lean forward, all ears and eyes and hope. You're going to tell me to take an acid bath, aren't you? Hear me out. Latin 201. I push to my feet. I have to go. Think how helpful it'll be when Doctors Without Borders sends you to ancient Rome. I slam the door behind me and leave for practice 40 minutes early just to avoid garroting my roommate. We were paired up during freshman year, and despite Mariam's unflinching meanness and my inability to timely replace empty toilet paper rolls, we have somehow become unwilling to live apart. Last year, we voluntarily moved together to a place off campus, and we just voluntarily renewed our lease, condemning ourselves to 24 more months of each other. The truth is, being together is simple and requires little emotional labor from either of us. And when you're like me, a goal-oriented, control-focused, overachieving perfectionist, finding someone like Mariam is a gift. Not a good gift, but I'll take it. The Avery Aquatic Center is the best facility I've ever trained at. It's fully outdoors, with four pools and a diving tower, and it's where all Stanford aquatic teams practice. Today, the women's locker room is blissfully silent. It's a rare Goldilocks zone. Swimmers are already off to practice. Divers aren't yet getting ready. Water polo players have recently been exiled to another building, and many a thankful tear was shed. I put on my swimsuit, slide a tee and shorts over it, set my alarm, and sit on the uncomfortable wooden bench, contemplating my life choices. Exactly 10 minutes later, my phone vibrates, and I stand, having achieved no clarity or inner peace. I'm walking to laundry services for a fresh towel when I hear a familiar voice. "Not okay," Penelope is saying. She stands in the hallway a few feet away, but doesn't notice me. "Not at all," she continues, a curl of tears in her words. I recognize it from that dual meet in Utah when she screwed up a forward pike, belly flopped like a flying squirrel, and slid from first to ninth. "Not for us." The reply is quieter, deeper, less distressed. Lucas Blomqvist stands in front of Penn, bare-chested and arms crossed, a pair of goggles around his neck and a cap dangling from his fingers. He must have just gotten out of practice because he's still dripping. The slight frown between his eyes is hard to interpret. Could be a glower or resting sweet face. I can't make out what he's saying, but it doesn't matter because Penn cuts him off. "There's no reason for that. If..." Another rich, low-pitched response. I retreat. This conversation is not for me. I don't need a towel that bad. "It's for the best." Penn leans closer. "You know it is." Blomqvist inhales deeply, and his glistening shoulders rise, making him look even taller. I notice the tautness in his jaw, the sudden bend of his head, the bunching of muscles in his upper arm. Menacing, threatening, scary. That's what he is. Next to him, Penn looks small and upset, and my brain clicks into a new mode. I couldn't care less whether it's my business. I stride closer, eyes narrowed on Blomqvist. My fingers tremble, so I fist them at my sides, and even though he is probably 4 times stronger than Penn and me put together, even though it's a terrible idea, I ask, "Penn, is everything okay?" Chapter 3. My voice ricochets against the tiled floors. Penn and Lucas look at me, equally taken aback. I swallow and force myself to ask again, "Do you need anything, Penn?" "Vandy? I didn't know you were..." Her mouth curves in a puzzled tilt. Then the distrustful way I'm regarding Lucas must register because her eyes widen and her lips part. "Oh my God, no, he wasn't, we were just..." She lets out a breathy laugh and turns to her boyfriend to share her amusement at the misunderstanding. But Lucas's gaze lingers on me.
"Everything's fine, Scarlett,"
he says. I'm not exactly inclined to believe him, but he doesn't sound defensive or annoyed or even angry at my obvious assumption that he's a danger to Penn. Also, he appears to know my first name, even though I've been Vandy for the entire sports community since I was 6. Fascinating. "I didn't mean to intrude," I say, unrepentant. Maybe I'm hypersensitive when it comes to situations like this one. Okay, I'm a stack of hypersensitivities in a trench coat, but I have my reasons, and I'd rather make a fool of myself and err on the side of caution than whatever the alternative is. Just making sure that...
"I know,"
Lucas says quietly, that blue gaze still settled on mine.
"Thank you for looking out for Penn."
The soft praise in his tone has my mind shorting for a second. By the time I recover, he's giving Penn's shoulder an affectionate squeeze and brushing past me. I follow the play of muscles on his broad back until he turns the corner, the baby hair drying at his nape, the black inked outlines rippling on his left shoulder and twisting down his arm. It's a full sleeve, but I can't quite make it out. "Trees, maybe?" "Shit," Penn says. I glance back, find her wiping a hand down her face. I definitely overstepped. "I'm sorry, I wasn't trying to be nosy. It's not you, Vandy." Her green eyes are shiny, a hair breadth away from overflowing. I was fully willing to be Penn's meat shield if it came to that, but pulling her back from crying? I doubt I can manage that. Would you like me to call Victoria? They're both seniors, and she's Penn's closest friend on the team. Not much of a pool. The twins are very absorbed with each other, and I've barely been around. Or I could ask Lucas to come back. Call me for what? Victoria appears. Aviator sunglasses inside. Purple smoothie. That dark, curly mullet that should be an aberration. Spectacular on her. I told you, I won't be complicit in the assassination of any more spiders. What the? It all happened so fast. Penn's tears bursting free, Victoria's scandalized gasp, the voices of the water polo team filling the hallway. Before I can excuse myself from whatever the hell is going on, the three of us are barreling into an equipment room. The door firmly shuts under Victoria's back. What the hell happened? She alternates staring at Penn, with worry, and me, with murder? And I feel a sudden spark of compassion for Lucas. Maybe people shouldn't go about indiscriminately glaring at others after all. I was having a fight with Luke. Penn wipes her cheek with the back of her hand. Aw, babe, about what? I'll give you guys some privacy, I murmur, reaching for the doorknob. Penn's fingers close around my hand. No, stay. I don't want you to think that Luke could ever... She takes a deep breath. I shift on my feet and think longingly of the locker room, the Epsom salt tub, a creepy porcelain doll factory, anywhere but the here and now. He could never be violent or mean. He's the best person I've ever... We've just been in the process of... Oh, God. Is this about the whole breakup thing? Victoria asks, significantly less gently. Not my business. Not my business. Intensely not my business. But Penn nods tearily. Listen, Victoria sighs like they've been over this. Babe, honey, I get it. You and Lucas have been together since you were like 12, 15, and popped each other's cherries, and now you're wondering what would an uncircumcised dick be like? A sniffle. Actually, in Sweden, most people don't. TMI. The point is, what the fuck are you doing? I've always found Victoria's bluntness delicious, but this seems a bit harsh. And Penn might agree because the weeping fades into a scowl. You're supposed to be on my side. I am. As someone who's on your side and has been on the dating scene for the last 2 years, I'm telling you, you do not want to lose that man. There are lots of assholes out there, and Lucas is a smart, decent, hot guy who puts the toilet seat down and has yet to contract the French disease. That's much rarer than you think. But I'm not happy, and he's not getting what he wants from this relationship either. Penn, come on. If he told you he's okay with not doing that stuff, he's settling, just like I'm settling, if we stay together. We'll get married, have a house in the suburbs, and 2.5 bilingual kids I cannot understand and will always wonder what we missed out on. I won't know what being young and free feels like, and he'll be bitter because he had to give up all that kinky shit, like spanking people and tying them up and ordering them what to do. I freeze. I should really not be here, but I can't leave because my feet weigh 1,000,000 pounds and every drop of blood in my body is flowing up to hang out on my cheeks. I get it. Victoria is exasperated. But you need to decide. A hard pounding at the door. We all jolt. Hey, is anyone in there? Victoria shouts. Yeah, just a sec. I left my gear bag in there, so if you guys could move your orgy to the showers... Victoria rolls her eyes but opens the door. We march past Gear Girl, Victoria with a defiant expression. Penn wiping residual tears, me stubbornly refusing to make eye contact. The conversation may have resumed, but the twins are coming our way. Where were you guys? Bella asks. I panic, but Victoria makes up something about a missing chamois on the fly because for her, lying doesn't require 2 to 3 business days of careful preparation, and we all go warm up like a big, happy family. I'm still flushed, aware of my pulse, Cogs turn in my skull. All I can think of is, Pen has always been so lovely to me. After my third surgery, when Barb couldn't take more than a week off without collapsing the field of medicine, Pen popped by to check on me every day. To make sure your evil roommate isn't making belts out of your skin, she'd say with a wink. But she's just a naturally caring person. And there was the time she sat down with me after my first dual meet to remind me that a few splashy entries didn't make me a bad diver. That sometimes we're just too much in our heads. That she'd been there too. That chaotic, overthinking feeling that makes the platform feel like a tightrope and turns your body into an unreliable narrator. That moment when your focus dissolves into panic and the dive is irreparably fucked before it even begins. It had meant so much to me back in the fall of freshman year. Everything was new and raw and too big. But Penelope Ross, world and Pan Am medalist, NCAA champion, held my hand and told me that she felt like I did. I think about it during Pilates and dry land training and while climbing up the infinite steps of the diving tower. I think about it as I stretch every muscle I possess with special care for my tender, stupid shoulder, the one that all my doctors insist is healed, but in my nightmares shatters like a champagne flute at least twice a week. By the time practice is over, I've made up my mind. And while the rest of the team chatters away in the locker room, I walk to her side, take a deep breath, and ask, "Could we go get coffee after this? Just you and I." Chapter 4. I thought it might be hard to say out loud, mostly because I never have, not to anyone who wasn't intimately involved in the matter. But the words flow out of me as smooth as a perfect dive. No hiccups, no stutters, just a knife-sharp slice through rippling water. I picture a panel of 7 smiling judges raising several perfect 10 boards in unison. "Full points, Ms. Vandermeer. This disclosure of your sexual history was unimpeachably executed. Now hit the showers." Not gonna lie, I'm feeling pretty proud. Unfortunately, Penn isn't impressed. "You are into that?" She blinks and glances around the Koopa Cafe. Classes started this week and campus is too crowded. Backpack straps wrapped around tanned shoulders, stickered water bottles, a new cohort of freshmen that comes in 2 versions, invincible and terrified. I started out the former, but my slide to the latter was swift. Penn sets her elbows on the small wooden table, satisfied with our level of privacy. "You're into what Luke's into." "Well, I can't be sure about that. But you said there are many, many facets to kink and BDSM." "Right. I've never talked with Lucas before this morning. I have no idea what he likes." "Should I tell you?" No, that's not..." I clear my throat, starting to have some regrets here. "That's beyond the, scope of this conversation." "Ah, you shouldn't feel like you have to explain what you guys..." "But I was there, unwillingly, when you and Victoria were discussing the matter, and she seemed to be lending a slightly less than, sympathetic ear." "Hall of Fame-worthy understatement. Please, continue." "I just wanted to offer myself as a resource, as someone who has experience in this. And this would be an established relationship in which only one party is interested in kink. Figuring out something you can both enjoy and can affirmatively consent to. If that's what you want, of course," I add with a small smile. She leans back in her chair to study me, and I know what she's seeing. Damp dark hair, guarded dark eyes, unexpectedly dark sexual history. I've never navel-gazed too much about what turns me on. She could slap me on a microscope slide and label me sexual deviant, and I wouldn't bat an eye. Still, it's nice to see more curiosity than judgment in the tilt of her head. "Luke wants to be in charge. Is that what you want too?" Or I shake my head. "The opposite, actually." "Ah." She curls a finger in an auburn strand of hair. Penn's coloring was the first thing I noticed about her back in the varsity circuit. How strikingly beautiful she was. Generous, too. In competition, between dives, athletes usually avoid looking at each other. Not Penn, though. Always a kind smile. Never arrogant, even though she was always ahead in our age group by leaps and bounds. The flag bearer at the Junior Olympics. She'd dive with pink, then blue hair. Friendship bracelets made by her fans. Nail art. I found her impossibly cool. I'll never not be intimidated by her, at least a little bit. How did you discover it? How did I discover that you were into it? A guy who looks remarkably like Dr. Rodriguez's fascist TA, the one who docked 1 point off my Orgo final for writing the wrong date, walks by. Bet he'd love an earful. I always knew, to some degree. I mean, I wasn't browsing eBay for deals on PVC masks in middle school, but once I became aware of and interested in sex, I always had fantasies, ideas. I shrug and don't add, it felt right. It feels right. I see. Penn nods, thoughtful. And how did you end up actually, you know, doing it? My high school boyfriend and I dated for about 3 years. I skipped the part where we were neighbors, then seventh grade best friends, then fell in love. I trusted him, and it was an easy conversation, as easy as everything else with Josh. Everything except for that phone call during freshman year. His subdued tone as he explained, "It's not just because of her, honestly. The distance is a lot, and maybe our personalities are too different for this to last." That one, it had been difficult. I told him what I was interested in. And was he interested too? I workshopped the perfect phrasing. Not in the same things. That's why I thought my experience might be relevant to you and Lucas. Because Lucas Blomqvist is kinky. Lucas, Olympic gold medalist, swim world darling, record-holding Scandinavian treasure, Blomqvist. What is life? And how did you approach the situation? I told him what I thought might be hot. Josh did the same. We cross-referenced. The resulting Venn diagram didn't include much, but still. This is so 50 Shades, Vandy. Right? Our eyes meet and we share a smile at the improbability of all of this. But she seems much more at ease. Would you be able to explain what you like about letting someone else take charge? Would I? It's lots of things garbled together. The ease of pre-negotiating a social interaction. Having, for once, specific instructions. The stable quiet in the never-ending chaos of my brain. The satisfaction of doing something right, of being told as much, disconnecting from the rest of the world and going with the flow. And yeah, I'm not sure why I'm wired like that, but pain and pleasure have always mixed up in my head, and it feels good when someone I trust pinches my nipples. It's that simple sometimes. To me, it's about freedom, she snorts. The freedom of having someone telling you what to do? I know it sounds counterintuitive, but I'm usually overthinking something, desperately trying to avoid screwing up and working myself up to a panic. Am I taking up too much space? Boring you? Disappointing you? Would you rather be somewhere else with someone else? Overwhelmed by the burden of wondering whether I'm doing it right. Doing what right? I laugh. I'm not even sure. Sex, but also, more in general, being a human? I shrug, because that's the problem, isn't it? There is no right or wrong way to exist. Real life doesn't come with an instruction manual. Fortunately, sex can. My kind of sex. If someone I feel safe with is directing me, you like the structure. That's a good way of putting it. I smile. I can't speak for Lucas, or people on the more dominant end of it. The word oscillates bizarrely between us. Truth is, I don't feel totally comfortable doling out BDSM terms either. Like any other community, I cradle an assortment of doubts on whether I have what it takes to truly belong. Labels have to be earned, and my pockets always seem too empty to pay up. But clearly, they get something out of it. Clearly. Are you and your boyfriend still together? Her gaze sharpens. I feel like I know so little about you. What a coincidence. I, too, know very little about me. We broke up. And the guy you're seeing now? I'm not seeing anyone, that is. But that's not because of what you're into? Not really. At least not entirely. What I like to tell myself, and whoever asks, Barb, mostly, is that I'm too busy and career-driven to date. But my celibate phase has been going on so long, I'm not sure it's voluntary anymore. And I'd rather not mention that after what happened with my dad, men can be unsettling to be around. I suspect I shouldn't ask it like this, but I truly have no clue how to phrase it, so I'll just... Did your ex hurt you? During sex, I mean. I nod. Sometimes. A little. And you were okay with it? Absolutely. Everything was pre-agreed. We constantly checked in with each other and had a safe word. Oh my God, so 50 Shades. Did it ever make you feel... Feel what? Like you're flushing 70 years of feminism down the toilet? Her face scrunches in a guilty grimace, but it's nothing I haven't asked myself. For me, choosing to be sexually submissive has little to do with gender equality. And I'm not giving up my rights. Josh always stopped when I asked him to, and the other way around. I shrug again. I understand how vulnerable it can be, discussing this stuff. For you, for Lucas even. Plus, kinky people sometimes get this bad rap, like we're intrinsically aggressive or predatory. I know you aren't, she hurries out, palms wide open. I'm not a prude, I swear. I don't think Luke is twisted or disturbed for wanting this. My relief is genuine. Good. It's more that I am not into it. That is absolutely your prerogative. I scratch the back of my neck where I forgot to put on lotion before diving. Hello, chlorine rash, my old friend. And if you told Lucas that you're not interested in exploring those sexual dynamics and he's insisting on it, that's a huge red flag that... That's the thing. He's not. We tried. Because it was... Well, it was obvious that he wanted it, so I offered. She wraps her hand around her untouched iced latte, but doesn't take a sip. I just hate it, being told what to do. Asking for permission. I already have Coach Seema's incessant commentary about my diving techniques buzzing in my ear. I don't want to hear you're doing this or that so well, Pen, while we're fucking. She rolls her eyes. Such paternalistic bullshit. No offense. This is perhaps the least relatable thing anyone has ever said to me. None taken. Did you tell him you didn't enjoy it? Yep. And he immediately stopped. Never brought it up again. He still wants it, though. I know he does. This conversation is taking a turn that's less Kink 101, more GQ sex advice column. I might be out of my depth. So he made the conscious decision to put his relationship with you and your well-being before his sexual preferences, which is commendable. It's stupid. The word is a sibilant, frustrated hiss. She leans closer, her eyes once again that liquid green. I love him. I really do. But a bob in her throat, her posture straightens. I want other things, too. I want to go to a party and flirt freely. I want to be hit on without feeling like I'm betraying someone. I want to have fun. A deep breath. I want to sleep with other people. See what that's like. It all sounds as fun as shaving my armpits with a can opener. But Penn is not me. Penn is outgoing and funny. Penn has work-life balance. Penn knows what to do and when to do it. Everyone likes Penn. How does Lucas feel about this? Is he angry or jealous? She rolls her eyes. Luke's too self-assured to feel anything as lowly as that. Wouldn't know what that's like. What about you? Would you be jealous if he were to sleep with other people? Not really. Lucas and I have history. We love each other. Honestly, even if we break up, I suspect that we'll find each other in the future. We're kind of meant to be. Where do these people get their bottomless reservoirs of confidence? From a pot at the end of a rainbow? Meant to be, except for the meh sex? It's not. The sex is good. For the first time in this very flush-worthy conversation, Penn flushes. Luke is, he's very single-minded. It's more that her phone buzzes, shaking the entire table. Penn glances at it once, mid-sentence, distracted. Then again, lingering. Fuck. Everything okay? My International Trade Study Group. I forgot we're meeting. She leaps out of her chair and quickly gathers her stuff, inhales her iced latte in record-eclipsing time, and tosses the cup in the recycling bin. I'm sorry. This is so rude. Unloading on you for 20 minutes and no problem at all. Do your thing. Okay, shit. I have to run all the way to Jackie's place. Her voice fades as she dashes out of the cafe and I'm left alone, contemplating the sheer weirdness of the afternoon. The sheer idiocy of putting myself in this situation. The sheer impenetrability of the relationship between Penelope Ross and Lucas Bloomquist. Then Penn runs back inside and stops by my chair. Hey, Vandy, I glance up. Did you forget something? I just wanted to say. Her grin broadens. It helps me realize how strained her earlier smiles have been. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me. For being cool and not judgy. I'm glad you're all healed and back on the team. I barely manage a nod, and then she's sprinting out, leaving me to wonder if anyone else ever uttered the word cool in relation to me. Chapter 5. By the following week, I'm starting to see the lay of the academic land. English composition is not impossible. My professor doesn't care whether my opinions are valid, only that I argue for them with my whole chest. Psychology, not as wishy-washy as I originally thought. There is a method to the madness of human behavior. Computational biology is a piece of cake, even if Dr. Carlson's perennial glower is a little unsettling. And then there's German, a tentacled, homicidal swamp infested with sharks and tarantulas and sentient currywurst ready to mangle me. Aren't there tutoring programs for people who are less than gifted when it comes to languages? Barb asks during our weekly call, after I air out my anti-Germanic propaganda speech for 30 minutes of despair. Nothing works with my schedule. I should have booked some help sooner, like back in the womb. But I think I'll be fine. I got a 2 out of 10 for the first assignment and a 3 for the second. Yay for upward trends! I'm sure you will, Scar. After she left Dad, after the battle royale that won her custody of me, after our lives became ours, Barb moved us to St. Louis, where she rules the Division of Orthopedic Surgery like an autocratic nation-state. Her job is incomprehensibly high stakes, pays her a semi-sickening amount of money, and keeps her so shockingly busy, one of my middle school teachers suspected I was a runaway secretly living on my own. She is, without question, the reason I want to be a physician. A bit of a cliche, I know, but it didn't come completely out of left field. I've always gravitated toward science, but it wasn't until I started doing my homework in Barb's office that I realized how admirable her work is, how she makes a difference, the breadth of her knowledge and the depth of her care. Why can't Dr. Madden or Dr. Davis take care of your patient? I once whined when she said she wouldn't be able to come to my meet. Because, she lowered her voice to a whisper, Dr. Madden is an asshole, an anus, and Dr. Davis is so spectacularly incompetent, I'm never sure whether he's rooting for the patient or the disease. Mrs. Reyes has been in pain for a long time. She deserves to be treated by someone who's not mediocre and will take her seriously. Would you agree? I was 14 at the time, but it made perfect sense. Not only was I proud of how incredibly badass Barb was, but I wanted nothing more than to be a non-mediocre physician who'd take people seriously. And now here I am, daydreaming of liver failure to escape the MCAT. By the way, Barb tells me, I met Coach Kumar the other day. I flinch. He's my high school coach. How is he? Good. He sends his love. Ask me about you. And you lied and told him that I'm a 12-time NCAA champion and Olympic hopeful? I considered that, but then I remembered that there are public records of this stuff, like online, a Google search away. I sigh. Is he mortified? Am I bestowing dishonor upon my old club? What? No. You're not a white-collar defense attorney on the Sacklers' payroll, Scarlett. You had a bad injury. Everyone's rooting for you. I cannot wait to disappoint them once again. How's the love of my life? Currently occupied with her pre-scheduled junk licking. Important business. Hang on, I think she wants to talk to you. Pipsqueak, the husky pug mix who was once up on Facebook Marketplace because of a bad temperament, falsehoods, slander, and an unbreakable scooting habit, yet to be broken, howls her love for me and tries to lick my face over Barb's phone. I baby talk at her for 15 minutes, then leave for practice. It's preseason, which means conditioning, skill refinement, takeoffs, entries, body positions, rotations, corrections, hours in the gym, the diving well, the weight room, and then more hours at home, in class, in bed. The nagging worry that all this training won't be enough, poking at the back of my skull. I'm a good athlete. I've TiVo'd my dives enough times to know that. My body is strong and healthy at last. My mind hates me sometimes, especially when I'm on a platform 10 meters above the rest of my life. Because 10 meters is high, but people don't realize how high until it takes them over 50 steps to climb a tower. They reach the top, look down, and suddenly get that queasy feeling in their stomach. It's a three-story building, a whole McMansion stretching between you and the water. Lots of things can happen in 10 meters, including a body accelerating to 30 miles per hour and the water becoming as difficult to crack as the universe's hardest eggshell. On the platform, punishments are swift and merciless. Room for error non-existent. A bad dive is not just ungainly and humiliating. A bad dive is the end of an athlete's career. A bad dive is the last dive.
The pool closes at 8, but take your time, Vandy.
Coach Seema yells up at me. I smile, palms flush against the course edge, and slowly lift my legs in a headstand. My shoulders, core, thighs, they all ache in that good clenched way that means control. I linger there, a perfect straight line, just to prove to myself that I'm capable of it. I have what it takes. It's a relief seeing the world resized. Liberating how insignificant everyone else looks from here. Small and irrelevant.
No hurry at all. I'm not bored out of my mind here.
I huff and let the rest of the dive flow out of me. Pike, half twist, a somersault, another. I enter the water with just a handful of bubbles. When I resurface, Coach is crouching poolside.
Vandy.
I lift myself on the edge, clutching my shoulder. Doesn't hurt. Doesn't bleed. Still intact. Yeah?
That is NCAA material there.
I squeeze water out of my braid.
Problem is, that's not the dive I asked you to do.
I look around. Where did I throw my chamois?
Vandy, look at me.
I do. I have to.
You can keep doing your emotional support dives, yes, but we have other issues we need to be focusing on.
He taps the spot between my eyes with his knuckles like he's inspecting coconuts at the grocery store.
You have to work on what's in here.
I know.
Then do as I say and don't change the damn dive when you're up there.
He sighs and shakes his head.
It's okay, kid. We got time. Go get changed. Y'all are coming over tonight.
The cookout. Yearly team-building tradition. He winks at me, crow's feet multiplying by a factor of 10.
Ain't no party like a Coach Seema party.
Tragically true, because a Coach Seema party is compulsory. I head for the locker room, sparing one last glance at the forward tuck the twins are practicing together on the springboard. I used to do synchronized diving, too, back in St. Louis. But there's only 5 of us in the Stanford team, which makes me the odd girl out. Bella and Bree compete together, 2 athletes who simultaneously perform the exact same dive and look identical. Judges eat that shit up. Penn and Victoria have been partners for 3 years and have a good thing going on. Maybe next year a new recruit will pair up with me. Or maybe I'll die alone in a veil of tears, clutching German present perfect flashcards. Who can say? I catch a ride to the Seemas with Victoria, who spends it updating me on a recently confirmed human case of the bubonic plague. We're the last to get there and the only 2 losers to show up without a +1.
Love this taste of what my Thanksgivings are going to be like for the next 50 years, she grumbles, pasting a smile on her face and reaching out to hug Mrs. Seema.
I chat with Leo, Coach's 13-year-old son, who's about as awkward as I am, until he pretends to remember outstanding homework and ducks back into the house. Then I go in search of something to drink and run into a wall. And by wall, I mean Lucas Blomqvist. When it comes to D1 college swimmers, he's not too much of a standout. Most of them are tall, most of them are muscular, lots of them are handsome. His proportions, broad shoulders, long arms and torso, huge hands and feet, are basically an instructional drawing. That is to say, it's not because of his looks that my thoughts swerve to a halt. Sorry, I am physically unable to produce a smile. Temporary cranial nerve 7 paresis. It's okay, though, because he doesn't smile either. His eyes pin me in place.
No problem.
He has a nice voice, deep and resonant. Familiar, but only vaguely, like an ad in the middle of a podcast. Heard it before, but tuned it out. Must be a byproduct of his orbiting the periphery of my life for the past 2 years, since the pool where the swimmers train is across from the diving well. Where did you get that? I point at a sports drink that looks oddly kid-sized in his hand. He gestures with his chin to a cooler that I could have easily located on my own. If only I wasn't an idiot. Right, thanks. Lucas nods, only once. I wonder if he came with Penn, if they ended up solving their issues, but she's nowhere in sight. He and I are, kind of hilariously, both wearing jeans and the same gray Stanford swimming and diving tees, except he's barefoot. Why is he barefoot in my coach's backyard? Also, why is he staring at me? Why am I staring back? I can't tear my gaze away. And I think it's because of his eyes. They're studious, focused, dialed in, preternaturally blue. Somewhere in the Baltic Sea, a cod splashes through a patch of water that precise color, and did Penn tell him about me? Did Penn tell him that she told me about him? Is that why Lucas looks so, I don't know, curious, absorbed, something?
What were you saying about the Swedish Open, dear?
Mrs. Seema asks. Lucas turns back to her, and I realize that I crashed right in the middle of their conversation. Or, most likely, her interrogation of Lucas. I've been on the receiving end of a few of those through the years, and they're no picnic.
When is that happening?
Next year, the week after the NCAAs.
Oh, my goodness! And you'll need to attend to qualify for the Melbourne Olympics, right?
Not after the World Championship.
He has an accent, in that faint Northern European way. I'm not even sure what letters it quotes, but I occasionally pick up on it.
Right, earlier this year, and you won that, so you're officially going to Australia next year?
He nods, indifferent,
like being an Olympian is not a big deal. His face is... That jaw has me thinking of diving cliffs, and the cleft in his chin, textbook movie star shit. He could be Captain America. Captain Sweden. Whatever. That is fantastic, dear. Now here's hoping that Penelope qualifies, too. She was bronze at the Pan Am Games last summer, but with so many mistakes. Ugh, typical Mrs. Seema Jab. She loves to imply that the diving team is an untalented bunch, chronically unworthy of her husband's coaching skills. I challenge her on this, but when it comes to me, I'm not sure she's wrong. Lucas, thankfully, has no such qualms.
She was still recovering from injury.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. A nervous laugh. Well, still, you won all your races, didn't you? His reply is a noncommittal grunt. I bet your mother's so proud of you. No reply at all, but the ink on Lucas's skin shifts like he's flexing his muscles. Maybe his relationship with his mom is as lovely and uncontentious as mine with Dad? Will she be in Melbourne too? Lucas's face could be a megalith on Easter Island. I bet she cannot wait to cheer you on. Sudden twitch in his jaw, like he's a single question away from a rampage. Come on, Mrs. Seema, read the Swede. If it was one of my children, I would take my whole extended family. By the way, Lucas, I interrupt. Pen was looking for you a minute ago. His eyes fix mine.
Was she?
He's not really asking. He knows it's a lie. Yep. Fly, little bird. Be free.
Excuse me,
he says in the general direction of Mrs. Seema. I help myself to some coconut milk, but when I glance to make sure he escaped safely, his attention is once again on me, and maybe Penn did tell him about me, and that's why he's so interested. Does he want to chat with me? Vent? Find someone who'll sympathize? Does he want a heart-to-heart, kingster-to-kingster? Maybe I should become a couples counselor. Nice alternative to med school. They might waive the foreign language requirement.
First batch is ready.
Coach yells from the grilling area.
Everyone, help yourself.
I eat my chicken burger slowly, quietly, while conversations flow. Penn sits in front of me, the center of attention, dispensing funny stories and warm feelings. Lucas is next to her, arms crossed on his chest, saying little, smiling rarely. He seems like a quiet, reserved guy. Together, they are viciously, comprehension-defyingly good-looking. I don't consider myself ugly by any means, but I had my years of braces and constant breakouts, which are not too far off. These two were clearly never less than radiant. Hard to stomach, really. For the first time, everyone on the team is over 21. Coach hands out his home brew, muttering something about how this better be our last sip of alcohol for the season. I picture him stirring and fermenting in the same bathtub where Leo discovered masturbation, and give it a pass. Lucas and Victoria, who both drove here, stop after the first bottle. The twins have two each and comment on how much stronger than regular beer they are. Pen, I don't know. Maybe she doesn't either. Her laugh is a little loud, but she's still her charming self. After dinner, I move to the patio with Bree, Bella, Devin, and Dale, where I struggle not to show how mind-boggled I am that two monozygotic twins are dating another set of